Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 36 of the Worldwide Knicks podcast. Coincidentally, guys, do you know who the only Knick player to ever wear 36 was?
I don't know. I'm not good with numbers.
Yeah, I'm usually bad with it. I only know because I looked it up earlier. But the answer to that is the great Rasheed Wallace. So,
nice. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So episode 36, the free agent bonanza episode. Omar here alongside Rafa and Alex. Guys, how are you doing tonight?
Good, thanks, man. Happy to be back. Yeah, I was actually listening to last week's pod on the when I was driving earlier today. I missed you guys, man. So,
no, you didn't.
It's always a weird episode, like it's because it's happened a couple times now where, you know, you've had other obligations and stuff, and it's just me and Rafa, and it's just like, it's a different vibe, you know. I prefer it when there's the three of us because get more varied opinions and stuff, but me and Rafa just kind of bouncing around. It's like the, you know, the inmates have taken over the asylum type thing, you know, so that's kind of the,
it's the vibe. It's weird talking about Tibbs without having someone defending him, so, yeah.
Do you know, that I was thinking exactly that. I was shouting in my car, you know. I was like, Rafi, just wait till I get back in the pod. That's what I was thinking. Just wait.
Oh man, yeah. It's. I mean, I would imagine if I missed the episode and you guys started trashing Julius, I'd probably be thinking the same thing on the listen back. But yeah. You know,
give it time.
Yeah, I gotta just kind of enjoy my Julius Randle moments while he's still here. You know, and then he's gone. I'll have to start driving another agenda. Maybe I'll shift to the Emmanuel Quickly agenda. Yeah. I feel like that's the natural progression.
So many of your other agendas have signed.
They're dead. So. Yeah. The Bamba agenda is dead. The Sexton agenda is dead.
Maybe you should go on the Tibbs agenda. No, I'm just joking.
Maybe I'll go absolute chaos and go on the Johnny Bryan agenda. You know, that might be could be fun. But let's get into it, man. Let's talk a little bit about free agency and what happened with the team. So before they made any signings, the Knicks made a few moves. So obviously on draft night, they traded away their 11th pick, which kind of freed up some salary cap room for this coming year. They also traded Kemba Walker as part of those draft night deals. Then they went ahead and traded Nerlens Noel and Alec Burks to the Detroit Pistons, which cleared up the necessary cap space that they eventually signed Jalen Brunson and Isaiah Hartenstein to. Before we even get into those deals for those two players, do you guys think that losing Noel and Burks was worth it to sign these two guys?
Well, I was just actually thinking there, who's got more ex-Knicks now, Detroit or Dallas?
Oh, well, let's see. I know Dallas still has Hardaway. Do they still have Burke?
Frank.
Yeah. Pinson.
Frank is still there.
Oh, they don't have KP anymore, of course.
Yeah, KP's good. Now, I think it's still Dallas, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No.
Kemba? No, I think it's tied.
Kemba's about to be waived.
Oh, Kemba was – okay, so it's Dallas because it's Knox, Burks, and Noel.
Oh, Knox, of course.
Yeah, Knox got the contract in Detroit. Yeah.
Shout out Kevin Knox, second contract.
Yeah. There he goes. There he goes.
But going back to the question, I mean, I think obviously a lot of it's to do with clearing cap space for Brunson, but I think it is a shift away from what they were saying at the end of the season was that, you know, they are wanting to focus on the future, the younger players, the wanting to head off in that direction. So I think it's just a statement almost that, you know, that's what they're looking to do. And it'll be really interesting. I'm sure we'll talk about it later about the, you know, how the kind of starting lineups and, you know, for opening night and things, whether that's going to be another statement, you know, what happens with Randall, et cetera. So I think it could just be the start. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, it was a shame to see certainly Burks go. I think he's got a very bad rep over the last few months. Very effective player for the team since he joined, and it was just a wee bit bit of a shame to see some of the comments online just about, you know, just glad to get them out of there, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And it was a real shame. And Noel's been a you know, hit, very hit and miss, obviously, with the injuries and things. So wasn't too upset about seeing him go, especially on the deal that he was on. Kemba, obviously, gutted that it didn't work out. We've talked about that before. We were all just so excited when he came on, and then a year down the line, you know, it's just ended up in pieces. So, yeah, I don't think it was just the necessary ones. It was the ones that everybody wanted to see go. Obviously, we think we could have got a bit more for Burks, maybe. But yeah, it just seems like the necessary move just to clear the cap space that was required. So,
yeah, I don't have that much to add because, yeah, they were the necessary moves. Kemba was a non-factor. Noel, well, he was a non-factor as well. And if we wanted to sign Mitch, we needed to get a little bit, well, those 2 million maybe matter in the cap space deal from Noel to Hartenstein or whatever. Oh man, oh my God. Give him a nickname, please.
You call my heart radio, man. You're good to go. No.
Oh my God. And Burks, yeah, Burks, he took the full front of the point guard Burks experience.
Yeah.
It failed and he took it full force. And maybe he went to Detroit with Noel, so Detroit would say, okay, we'll take both of those. Because you added Burks, maybe we take Noel as well. Okay, along with the second round picks or in with the 11th pick or whatever the trades were. I don't even know, man. We need a map to guide me here. But yeah, I'm basically trading Kemba, Noel, Burks in a couple of seconds and a 11th pick for Brunson and Hartenstein. I'm not mad.
And future first round picks.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'll just say this. I maybe this is a little too sentimental of me so early in the episode, but you know, I think I'm going to look back on that 2020 year incredibly fondly because, you know, that was the first time in a long time we had enjoyed success in the regular season and a playoff berth. And, you know, that team was just fun. You know, that's when the three of us kind of, you know, really got to knowing each other and stuff like that. And Alec Burks and Nerlens Noel are a big part of that. You know, so I'm always going to, I feel like, remember that, you know, quote unquote, we here season, you know, and, you know, you remember, obviously, the great moments that you got from Julius and RJ and Mitch as well before he got hurt. But I think you can't overlook the big shots that Burks hit and the timely defensive play of Nerlens Noel. So, you know, best of luck to both of them in Detroit, obviously. You know, maybe I'll get to see him play, you know, them being here in the Pistons if they stick around on the team come the start of the regular season. But moving on, the cap is cleared, so that allowed them to make their biggest deal, you know, the tampering special, Jalen Brunson, 4 years, $104 million, comes back to New York City where his father has a job, where his agent's father runs the team. A lot of connections there with Jalen Brunson. And presumably he's going to be the team's starting point guard on opening night, barring any sort of setbacks. So I guess my question for you guys is, I talked about this before between us privately, that I think the big thing with Brunson was the fact that he was never going to be the lead guard in Dallas. That was always going to be Luka, and you're always going to be playing a Luka's shadow there. Here, he gets a chance to kind of be his own man, so to speak. So 4 years, $104 million. I guess, one, do you like bringing the player in? And two, are you okay with the number?
I mean, you were on Brunson quite early, Omar. Maybe you were beating that drum for quite a while.
He was going to go back to Dallas after they had success.
I think me and Rafa were a wee bit more up and down on him, but I think probably your knowledge of the kind of college game probably helped from that respect because obviously he had such a successful college career. Yeah, my worries with him back then was more, you know, he's kind of come a little bit from nowhere in the NBA, so to speak. You know, it's a contract year. You know, he's playing with, you know, Luka obviously frees up a lot of space for him. Is he just showing out because, you know, the defense is so set on Luka? Do you know, I had quite a few worries about him, obviously his size as well. People said he was a poor defender. All these kind of things made me a little bit worried, you know. But to be perfectly honest, you know, he's just seeing a lot of the footage, especially over the last few weeks, have really, you know, made me change my mind on it. I'm all in on him now. He seems to be the perfect player for that position for us, because I'm assuming we're still going to be looking to RJ to have the majority of the ball a lot, you know, and he's proven to be a player that doesn't necessarily need the ball all the time. He can play off ball a lot. I mean, we're talking about, you know, going for Ivy and there was a few other players linked as well who are players that, you know, clearly needed the ball and you're like, well, what does that mean for RJ? You know, we ended the season, you know, kind of, this is RJ's team, you know, he can, you know, he's running the show, and then suddenly we're bringing in a player that demands the ball, but Brunson doesn't, you know, and he looks like that perfect complementary player. Obviously his attitude as well just jumps out to me. He just looks like a guy that, you know, just run through brick walls for 4 years a coach, you know, which, you know, is probably music to Tibbs' ear, you know. And just looks like a great guy, you know. Just I can't really see a fault with it. I mean, the 104 million, which, you know, once the cap goes up especially, is going to seem like a bargain, I think, especially for a guy that's second best player on, you know, a finals team, a conference finals team. So I just really don't see the problem with it. You know, Anthony Simons in Portland just got 100 million, you know, extension, you know. And then you see guys that are signing for 200, 250 million. And it's just like this is a bargain. You know, it's going to end up being a bargain, certainly by the end of his deal, I think. So, yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, Alex is right. I was a bit skeptical as well, especially about the I remember the numbers we were talking about Brunson at the time was 20 mil per year. I don't know how many years we were talking, around 20. He gets 26, a bit, well,
I didn't it's the free want agent tax, right? You know, that, yeah, that's what that is. Yeah.
As well, if you want to snatch a player from another team, you have to overpay him a bit more. So it's only natural you do it like that. But obviously, this season we paid much more attention to Brunson. But if you look at his numbers, because obviously you pay attention to the New York Knicks, at least I talk for myself, I'm not able to accompany every player from every team, every young player growing up, and unless they have a tremendous season. And this season for Brunson was the first one when he was actually a starter for the team. So the other years he started a few games because of injuries, but this year he was actually a starter and his numbers kept improving. So is a 25, a better point guard on paper than a lot of point guards that we had throughout this century. So, man, I'm happy with it. I was happy with it. I was happy that we got our guy. We set out to have Brunson and we got him. If we didn't get this guy with all the, let's call it, tempering questions surrounding it, it would be a massive disappointment. Like, everything was okay, Brunson is coming here. If he doesn't, I don't know what to do with his front office. But I think his role will get bigger here with the Knicks. Even if the ball goes more to Randall and to RJ, his role will be slightly larger than it was in Dallas. So see if he adapts that well as well. So if he can, his numbers, he has steady numbers, field goal percentages, free throws, three-point shooting as well. He's a good three-point shooter. There's a lot of lefties in our team now, which is we can almost do a all lefty lineup. So maybe we should adapt Grimes to shoot with the left hand. I don't know.
I heard that earlier in another pod. And does that really bother you?
Not really. I don't think so. I think for
other, you know, teams, who it bothers? It bothers Stephen A. Smith.
Oh, yeah. The only goal left. I mean, imagine if you're normally defending guys who shoot with your right hand or go right more often. You're playing against guys that go the other way, will always go left because it's the majority. It's not as easy to defend. And normally, I'm pinning this to soccer. A guy with left foot is much, it's way better than the left foot than the other guy with only his right foot, because we tend to use both feet. I don't know. Right. A guy with left foot just goes for the left foot altogether and gets even better with that. So I don't know if defending in this way in basketball can get you, a little off pace defending a guy or many guys with the left hand, because you're doing the opposite. And then mm-hmm. you substitute mm-hmm. guys in with all right hand line. And I don't know if that is a factor.
Let me dissuade anybody that might have some misgivings. Jalen Brunson has no problem going right as well mm-hmm. as he does going left. He has zero issues. So when you really dive into this guy, and this is kind of like after the dust has settled, I kind of been able to gather my thoughts on it. The guy fits the archetype of what they look for when they've been drafting players. The guy was a winner his entire life. Like, he was a top recruit in high school. He, at Villanova, he won the national championship twice, a bunch of awards, All-American, all that good stuff. And he comes to Dallas, and what does he do? He contributes to winning. Villanova does not recruit people that can't handle the moment. Like, if you ever listen to Jay Wright, who just retired from coaching, but he was there for like 20, 30 years. You ever listen to him talk about the type of guys he recruits? There's a reason that they all have commonality in the NBA. You had like Kyle Lowry, Mikal Bridges, Eric Pascal, on the lower end. All these guys are tough NBA players who just have the necessary tools that it takes to really thrive in this league. So
Rafa said last week on that pod I was listening today, about handling the more, not just the New York spotlight, but the being a point guard in New York. It's not something that should be overlooked, and he just seems like sort of guy that could just thrive in that situation. So
absolutely. Yeah. And you look at this, think about it like this. Julius Randle last year had to get set up by a point guard who mostly was either just a shell of himself in Kemba or was a good player who was playing out of position, Alec Burks. The year before that, he had a very one-dimensional point guard in Elfrid Payton distributing the ball to him. Okay, so what that really means is you get a guy who's much more competent. This team won 37 games last year. You would imagine he would make them better enough to at least be at the 500 point. So
yeah,
I think it's a home run. I think they, like you mentioned, Rafa, they identified the guy that they wanted, and they went ahead and got him. And I know there's like the statistic that he's the first $100 million contract without like an all-star game appearance or something like that. And, it's whatever. Who cares? That's the point is, like, he's going to set up Julius to succeed. He's able to play off ball. So lineups, I think, with him and IQ are going to be really interesting whenever they're on the floor together. And, allows, like you guys mentioned, allows RJ to kind of initiate offense, allows Julius to initiate offense and him to initiate offense. So it's a three-headed monster when it comes to offensively. There are defensive concerns, of course, because of the size. But I think he's very strong and he delivers effort. I think that's important. Like Kemba just – he just didn't have it. He was never a good defender. I think Jalen does attempt to be a good defender, and he does close out on guys, and he has good technique. The problem is it's a physical matchup problem. Like when they play Charlotte, for example, they might hunt him with LaMelo Ball because LaMelo is so much taller. But overall, I'm a fan of the signing.
Just a quick thing, Omar, just that stat about, all-star stat. I mean, I just really rolled my eyes at that. I mean, it's just over $100 million for a start, okay? And $100 million, even two or three years ago, is not what $100 million is these days.
It's a flawed argument.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely. Like, and the guy's 25. It's not as if like he's a veteran, like over 30, and he's not made an all-star team. Like give the guy a chance. It smacked of the media trying to find something wrong.
They don't know how to react to the Knicks operating like a competent organization.
Exactly.
It's what it is, right? It's like we're doing moves, the moves we wanted, and I'm not mad with anything they did. This the draft or the free agency. They got the guys they wanted. There was no fuss around it. There we weren't in on Murray because people wanted us to trade everything for Murray, like trade unprotected first picks, the Knicks for Murray. Why would we do that? People wanted us to trade for everybody else. Like people just okay, the Knicks want to do this, so I'm against it. So we are all against it. If Brunson went somewhere else, the minute Brunson, there was that quick thing about Brunson having that meeting with Miami, people were like, uh-oh, Miami? Okay, Brunson's a good fit there. Oh, he's good now. Great. Now Miami wants him in Dallas. He's good. Maybe this was all a lie, but when we didn't know if it was or not, but when Miami wanted him, he was good. Like every player that the Knicks touch, the media immediately turn into bad deals or bad players.
And there's something to be said about the fact that in New York, he gets the chance to be that lead point guard. If you threw him in Miami, you have to compete with minutes with Kyle Lowry. Obviously in Dallas, he would have had to compete with Luka. In New York, this becomes his offense to run, you know?
Would he compete with Lowry? I don't know anymore.
Well, it's tough to say. I mean, you never know with Spoelstra, obviously, right? But at the end of the day, Lowry would still be on the roster. And he's still making 30-some-odd million per year. You know, it's a lot of money. So
talking about bad deals.
Yeah, that deal has not aged well. That's for sure.
Do you know, guys, so I've missed a lot over the last few days. Do you know if there's still a chance that it's going to be a sign-in trade? Or is it still?
Yes. Technically, there's still a chance, but because of the fact I think that the Knicks are operating under the cap as opposed to over the cap, it limits the possibilities. But if I'm Dallas, I'm pushing for that as much as I possibly can because you want to get something back.
I think that Dallas will go like, hey, if you give us something, we won't say anything about the tampering that could have existed. Because even if they can prove it, the things will go over because Dallas didn't really say anything about it. Or they insinuated something and the deal didn't win through. So maybe they're trying to work something out for them not to be, okay, there was tampering. Because if I was Dallas and I wasn't getting anything back and I have the idea that the tampering could have occurred, I would be like, that was tampering, get them. Dallas hasn't said anything.
That's an interesting point, Raf. I hadn't thought of that. How quiet the Mavs have been since it happened. You know,
it's only Cuban, so yeah. So he talks.
So if it is a sign and trade, who do you guys think is going back in that deal?
You'd have to think Fournier would. I mean,
that's what I think as well. Yeah.
I mean, I pitched Randall to you for obvious reasons, but yeah. It would just money wise, I guess it would have to be
It could be Rose, maybe. Like, I don't know.
That would be too much. I think Fournier straight for Brunson. That's maybe not what the Knicks are saying. Hey, man, this give us something else because that's not enough. It's Brunson and something for Fournier if you want it. Like, there might be negotiating a bit on that end.
I heard they're in for Sexton as well to replace Brunson. That could be.
Yeah, I think he's going to end up back in Cleveland now, honestly, because they're pretty hard capped, I think, the Mavs are. So unless it was like a sign and trade with Cleveland to make that work. But, I mean, that would be an adequate replacement for Brunson, you know, because he is capable of playing off ball as well, which is one of the reasons why I liked him as a possibility for the Knicks so much. Because he has that skill set. Yeah. RIP the Colin Sexton agenda, man. You had to remind me again. But let's move on to the other less high profile signing that the Knicks made, which I was super happy that this happened. I know I'd mentioned it, I think, a few weeks back as a possibility, and we didn't really talk too much about it. But Isaiah Hartenstein from the Clippers signed a 2-year deal, $16 million, as a backup center. The book on this guy is he has a little bit of range. He's not really a stretch five, but he can hit a shot, so he's a threat every now and then. Excellent rim defender, I think second best in the league at the rim, and good shot blocker, decent rebounder, just overall really good backup center. And still pretty young. You know he's younger than Obi, by the way?
Yeah.
which is crazy. So 2 years, $60 million for a backup center replaces Nerlens Noel while they continue to develop Jericho Sims. So Alex, what do you think about this Hartenstein guy?
I mean, I don't see any issue with it at all. You know, the money's perfect, you know, for what he is. You know, haven't seen a bad word about him since he signed. It almost makes you think, well, there's got to be something wrong with this guy. Do you know, like, he didn't seem to have any weaknesses in his game. He's a good passer.
His weakness is the sample size, you know?
Yeah.
There's not a large sample size.
I heard there was earlier attitude issues, but, you know, he's over that. He seems to be over that now. But, yeah, just whenever you get a player that easily, it just all... always gives me everything gives me the fear, but I'll always have a...
I'll say this about that. The Clippers had to make decisions because they're paying a lot of players a lot of money.
Yeah.
So they decided to bring back Batum and Coffey and sign John Wall. So...
Yeah, not just because of that, because of seemingly nobody else was in. You know what I mean? It just seemed to all just flow. You know, we didn't seem to be competing with anybody and it was just like, oh... I don't know. It just made me think it was all too easy.
They had to sign Zubac as well, right?
They extended him. Yeah, which well deserved. He's a really good player.
Yeah.
They,
I like this pickup. Is people were mad when we re-signed Noel for $10 million because it was too much for a backup point guard. Oh my god, a backup center. Now we have a cheaper backup center that can shoot the three. It's a really small sample, but I like...
The point is that he's a threat. That's the thing.
I love the stat that start comparing him to Mitch. But
free throw one.
Oh, my God. He shoots the same percentages from three than Mitch from the free throw line. I laughed way too hard, and I cried a bit after. How many times did we talk about this in the pod during this past season? We need something at center to be different than that center that only is it's only a shot blocker. And now we get that. We have that. So I'm happy with this pickup. You mentioned, Omar, that he's got play backup with Mitch, obviously being the starter. There's no doubts this year. Sims getting ready. What about Gibson? Do you think he's we keep him in the team like a precaution as Mitch keeps injured, or paying Mitch this money is like, yeah, we're gonna believe him, he's gonna play, we believe in Sims to be a backup if we need him, and Gibson can go so we can get a little bit more cap space?
I think they got Taj on speed dial type thing, you know, like if the Mitch injury happens, I wouldn't be surprised if he, like, at some point Taj, like, if he doesn't pick up a contract somewhere, he just like retires from basketball and comes on the coaching staff. Like, that wouldn't surprise me one bit either.
So he isn't Udonis Haslam?
Yeah, I would love to see him on the coaching staff, but I don't know if he's a wee bit too young for that still. You know, he's still got a bit left in him, but it's up to him, obviously, what he wants to do his career. But I agree with Omar. I think it's just, you know, if other things don't pan out, then yeah.
Also, something to keep in mind, the way they paid him last offseason was kind of like a favor, you know, to Taj. So I think it's kind of like, hey, we gave you more than you probably should have been getting last year. So, you know, don't really sign with anybody unless we actually need you, you know, about 20 games in. So I think somehow, some way, he'll be back on the team one way or another.
I mean, I guess we've got no real draft picks coming in. Because the second
round pick, disrespect to Trevor Keels.
Oh my god!
The theory is that he's going to end up on a two-way deal.
Yeah.
So quite a few guys have gone out with nothing coming back. So, I mean, there are roster spots available that he might just be able to come in as a kind of 15th man and just round off the bench, and he's there if we need him, sort of thing.
While we're talking about centers, let's jump into Mitch. Mitch got re-signed, ending a lot of speculation about if they're going to keep him, if they're going to extend him, how much they're going to pay him. So they ended up paying him 4 years, $60 million extension, effectively, technically breaking the Charlie Ward curse. Ooh. I personally feel like it should be a first-round pick who breaks it. But yeah, that's,
it's
just
got to be RJ to break it, I think.
How funny would it be if it was Quickly who broke in, not RJ? Like, they extend Quickly first. That'd be kind of funny. I don't think that's going to happen. It has to be RJ.
Hysterical.
Take it easy. So I guess all that speculation's over. And with it, my Mo Bamba agenda also died. I think I might call this episode the death of Omar's agenda. But so I guess considering everything, Mitch's maturity issues, the injury history, and the fact of bringing him in on a 4-year deal, $15 million per year, was this the right decision to bring Mitch back?
I'm kind of torn on this because, do we know yet if there's any kind of team options or anything in the...
Yeah, we won't know until the 6th when it's fully finalized. If it's a fourth-year team option, I'd be a lot more comfortable with that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask about the team option, if there was a team option. I was searching a keyboard warrior. Yeah, sorry.
15 does seem a lot. I mean, if we're comparing him to Hartenstein, I mean, there doesn't seem to be talent-wise a huge difference in what they can bring to the team. But what I like about the two of them is that, you know, there's a better variety to what they can give. With Noel and Robinson last year, it seemed to be just, you know, they were too similar. We needed that, you know. Hartenstein seems to bring a bit more passing, potentially a bit more shooting. I know he's a very small sample size in that three-point percentage, but I like the blend of the two of them better. Mitch has got all the talent in the world, but and we've talked many times about how, he's not. I mean, he gets the kind of, he hasn't developed. I mean, I think I've even used that. He hasn't developed since he was drafted. But I mean, he has developed, but just a lot slower than we'd really want to. And yes, that could be down to a little bit of, a lot of centres take a bit of time to develop. Same as point guards, you know, they don't always come straight into the league and blow you away, you know.
Wiseman, perfect example of that.
Yeah, maybe 2-3 years to show out, but there still is obvious worries with Robinson and the injury thing is a bit overblown because he has played a lot of games, especially last year, but it's the type of injuries he's had that they're always worry for a big man to have. But then again, there's a lot of freak injuries in there, you know, so I'm not overly concerned about that, the injuries. It's more just what he can bring to the team. I mean, he, as a centre, you know, a 4-year centre, you've got to be able to at least kind of set a good screen and, you know, you have a bit more of an offensive game than just dunking. You know, he's going to end up being a DeAndre Jordan sort of thing. You know, that's all he can do. You know, and teams are smarter than that and can cover that. You know, and I don't love his game, I've got to admit, but I think they did need to bring him back. I think we did need that kind of consistency at the centre spot, and especially if Tibbs is staying on. You know, Tibbs needs that rim protection, and he seems to love Mitch. So what he can do in that side of the game. So yeah, I think it was an obvious choice to bring him back rather than lose him for nothing. So, but yeah, the money's a little bit more than that. What I'd hoped for, but I think we just paid the price for not extending them last season. So
it's a similar situation to Brunson, if you look at it, this is the last year he played the most, 72 games, so he only missed 10 games, which is for Mitch is something amazing. And this was the first year he got to play as a starter. He started 62 games. The year prior, when broke his foot, he was starting to get consistent. And that's me and Omar were talking about this before the recording. Mitch, the thing with Mitch and people around Mitch is when he is healthy and he gets to play, you can see him dominate. Because he's able to dominate the boards, he's dominate defensively. Offensively, it's just offensive rebounds and the putbacks and the dunks, like Alex said. But he can dominate, and maybe that's those 16 or this 15 he's getting, maybe it's not the when the cap goes up, maybe it's not that big deal again. Like exactly the same thing as Brunson. Like in 2 years or 2-3 years, when the cap goes up, that this contract won't look as bad. So I don't mind this contract. I'm glad he's back. If we didn't keep Noel, I understand he's staying for the stability at the center position, because we this Mitch experiment we had this year as well. People forget about this. This the heavier Mitch we got at the beginning of the season was a failed experiment as well. So he had to work to trim down his body, and he was way more effective in that period. So I'm okay with this.
I was going to mention that, Rafa. The there is a concern about his training staff. I believe you know that they're not the most well-respected trainers in the world. And that whole nonsense at the start of the season, last season, where he came in, you know, very heavy. You know, they pitched it as in, you know, they were trying to get him to do all these post moves and be stronger in the post and things and help you protect him from injury. But it was just, it was way too much. You could tell that at the start. And I was willing to give it a go. And then you could see he was starting games and he was needing to come out after 5 minutes. You know, he was knackered, you know, and who gave the okay for that? I don't know, but that was...
can you imagine Tibbs's face? If Tibbs didn't know, can you imagine Tibbs's face when Mitch arrived? Like, what the fuck am I looking at?
Yeah.
So, what I think, like, all right, this is like Julius Randle Stan coming out here. I feel like Julius needs to introduce him to his trainer, because say whatever you want about Julius's effort level, the man is always jacked and in great shape at the start of the year. So
look at how this man, we're talking about a center, Mitchell Robinson, and he gets Julius Randle in the conversation. Oh my God.
Does Julius Randle not come in great shape ever since he came to New York?
Yeah. Think back to that picture with the chains around his neck.
It's forever in my mind, okay? It never goes away.
I'm a married man, but yeah, I was that photo.
Kendra
yeah.
has some competition when it comes to Alex, you know? So that's good to know. For the rest,
that escalated quickly.
Yeah, it sure did. You know?
Yeah. What's in this wine?
So I guess my thing on Mitch is, you're making $15 million a year now. You got to act like it, right? You got the maturity has to go up. You have to be, you know, you can't be like posting things on IG stories about got some cardio in tonight or, you know, whatever the case may be. And he has said that, you know, he's ready to get to work and he's committed. So it's always tough in the contract year, right? Because sometimes some player will ball out just to get the money and then they'll decelerate. Other times some players stress about it. And then they're able to focus and get better as the contract ages. I'm hoping that because Mitch had so much on the line as a second round pick, that he'll be able to elevate. You know, the optimist in me is thinking that. But on that note, do you guys think they should have gone maybe a different route at center as opposed to keeping Mitch? Are you guys fully on board with him being retained? Like, obviously, you know, Bombo's on the market. Ayton. Still on the market, right? You know, if you really wanted to go for a max level guy at the position. Gobert, we'll talk about later, was available in the trade if you really wanted to be crazy, you know? So there were centers to get, point B, you know? So, or, you know, maybe you give Hartenstein more money to make him your starter and have Jericho back him up. So is there another option that you will like going with, or are you guys content with having Mitch back?
No, I know we've argued about the, you know, MVPs and all being big men recently. But, I mean, I guess between Robinson and Hartenstein, that between the two of them, you get everything you want from the center position. So, and on what was it, $76 million, something like that? You know, everybody keeps going on, you can't overpay at the center position. You know, you need it for other areas. And I kind of agree to that to a certain extent. And unless you've got some kind of 3-point shooting big, then yeah, I mean, I think they're fine what we've got. I think I'd much rather overspend in other areas, you know, and you know, look at the kind of Boston situation. You know, just, you know, get your main players as your wings and go from there. That's the modern game these days. So it just, I think the MVP thing with Embiid and Jokic and everything. I mean, Jokic especially can, you know, is not really a, you know, a traditional center. Do you know, you can, you know, he's basically a point guard, do you know, and so I think it's unfair to kind of say, oh, look how valuable centers are because he's won the MVP, but it's a bit more complex than that. So I'm fine with it, to be honest. I didn't want to go anywhere close to Gobert. Horrendous deal, horrendous contract. I don't want any part of that. So the only one I kind of possibly fancied that was big money was, and you're going to hate me for this, is Kat, maybe down the line, but not now, but maybe a bit further down the line. But I know he's extended now, so that's probably that one gone. So,
and to your point, that's an interesting point about not overpaying centers, getting overspending on other areas, and then trying to get centers on bargains. How many teams, how many of the super teams or the big teams struggle because they don't have a good center? Like the Heat, and when they got LeBron and Wade and Bosh, they got Big Z playing center, and they got Chris Anderson. Like, yeah, I mean, it was the best they get. And look at the Cousins went all over the Marcus Cousins has been playing all over the big teams trying to give him that depth. It's like, teams need it. They don't want to pay centers, but they need good, effective centers. So it's kind of weird how the teams don't want to pay them, but the big teams then just struggle all around. JaVale McGee gets titles because he needs to play somewhere, and they're trying to offer low deals to Dwight Howard, and you see centers with 36 or 37 playing because they don't have money to get a bigger, younger center. So it's weird, that situation, to me, because centers are valuable, but teams don't think they're valuable enough. But you don't win without a center. Like, look at the experiment with the Houston Rockets, where they traded Clint Capella to go small. Harden is nowhere near there. So, but I'm happy with Mitch and the signing and the two centers, or three centers that we have. It's, like I said, it's not, maybe down the line with the cap going up, it's not that much money. I'm happy with it. It's stability. Mitch knows the way the team plays, knows the players. No need to adjustment. No need to trim his body. No ankle bracelets again, or bracelets or whatever. Like, he had all of this season, and he still was valuable when he was able to contribute. So I'm happy with it.
Yeah, and you know, you gotta like the continuity as well. You know, that they drafted this guy in the second round, stuck with him, developed him, and now, you know, they're paying him, keep him with him. So, which, you know, we talked about earlier about, so, you know, people think it's like, oh, same old Knicks, same old chaotic Knicks, you know, and, you know, key retaining a second round pick that you developed is definitely not something a chaotic franchise does, right? So I like it from that perspective as well. And I'm hoping he has a good year, and that he could stay healthy, most importantly. And it becomes an issue too, where a lot of people suggest that if Julius is going to be around all year, that he liked playing with Noel more. So, you know, maybe, you know, they can now he's locked in. They'll probably work together with RJ and Julius and Mitch to make sure they're all humming come start of the season. But it seems like all the team's moves are done. That leads to the question of, in terms of like projected lineups and rotations, what are you guys envisioning that Tibbs is going to do this coming season?
Find it hard to find a bigger fan of Grimes than me, but like, I really want him to see him kind of into the starting lineup. I think he'd be a really nice compliment to Brunson. So I'd love to see kind of opening night them sticking with this new direction and going for a kind of Brunson, Grimes, Barrett kind of three there. But, you know, that probably depends on Fournier and what happens with Fournier. I mean, I'm I've been very up and down with Fournier this year or this past year. But I would like to see him in a bench role, an impact player from the bench. I think he could be really good there. I don't think that's anything to be ashamed of, to kind of, as long as he's getting his minutes, he's been effective. But I'd like to see a more balanced starting five with respect to kind of the defensive side. So, certainly from the start of the season, I'd like to see Brunson, Grimes, RJ, Randall, and Mitch starting out the year. I know a lot of people want quickly in there, but I'm not as sold as other people on Quickly's defensive side. So I don't want to pigeonhole him as this kind of spark off the bench thing. That's unfair. But yeah, just from a defensive side of things, I'd rather Grimes in there because he's just that kind of hustler guy that I think would complement Brunson so much more. But I guess training camp and things will probably find that out, you know, which players connect well with Brunson, can emerge well with Brunson in the lineup. So yeah, it'll be an interesting one, but it certainly seems by the moves that they make that they're looking to kind of go with a younger lineup. So if there's no more moves to be made, I think Fournier to the bench is probably unrealistic, but something I'd like to see.
I want to know if, because I have trouble believing that we aren't making any more moves. I don't know if Rose starts the season with us or if he's traded fairly quickly, because if we know Tibbs, and Tibbs keeps to his guns, I believe he will. You have too many players to play right now, especially. It's a Cam, Grimes. If we play Rose, it's Rose and Quickly, the second unit, with probably Grimes. And then we have Obi and Hartenstein. So you leave out Cam in this situation. And I don't know if they will leave out Cam again or if Tibbs miraculously will increase the rotations this year. I don't think he is. But I would like to see if trade some player. Imagine if we don't have Rose. I would like to see a little bit more movement with the lineups. The big problem last year was keeping with the same lineups, even if they weren't working. We have enough players to try and mix and match. Like, we asked for a lot less seasons. I wouldn't mind Grimes starting a few games because I agree. I've said this a bunch. I think Grimes would be a better fit for Randall. Because Randall with Bullock worked perfectly, and Randall with Fournier didn't work as well. So I would like to see Randall with Grimes at two-man game, and then with RJ and Brunson obviously starting, and with Mitch. And I would like to see that situation with Fournier and Grimes, like, switching depending on the matchup, or even if one starts, maybe he plays for only 15 minutes and the other one on the bench plays more. So I would like to see that thing. I like him, obviously. But if D-Rose was traded, I wouldn't be surprised. Let's put it like this. So we could start Quickly and then have Fournier or Grimes with Cam and Obi with Artenstein. Even so, we have pretty good players to mix and match defensively, offensively. If I believe we can do that. I don't see people. A lot of people are asking for Cam to start. I don't see how he would jump. Let's put it this in a hierarchy. It's Fournier, Grimes, and then Cam. Or Quickly. I'm not putting Quickly in that mix because Quickly I put it in the point guard mix. So Grimes for me should start, but I know he won't. I know Fournier will be the starter for Tibbs. Like the consistency from last year. So let's just hope Fournier plays better this year than he did last year.
Okay, guys, you ready for a bold prediction?
Go for it.
By the end of the year, Emmanuel Quickly will be the team starting two guard. I just feel like from an offensive dynamic perspective, he gives you a guy where if Brunson has a bad matchup, who could handle the ball, and who has played with these guys already. I think Grimes is the one that makes sense to your point. He's a great catch and shoot shooter, gives you that defensive versatility. I think Quickley's a good defender, but he has the same problem that Brunson has, limited by his size, you know. And he sometimes gets a little too eager, as we saw this past year, where he would get into early foul trouble by being a little too aggressive on ball. The real mystery is what do you do with Fournier, and if he would accept 25 minutes off the bench, you know. And that's something that Tibbs has to decide. You know, how does he want to use Fournier, and are they going to be able to communicate that with Fournier? But I feel like IQ's role is going to be enhanced in some way this year, whether it be as a backup point guard, like you alluded to, Rafa, or, you know, in spots playing the starting off-ball guard, and then eventually maybe claiming that position for his own. And, you know, a lot of people, they comment about, like, Leon Rose never saying anything. But remember when he released that press statement, the press release after the, I think it was after the draft, where they said that these moves help us in prioritizing the development of our young players. I think that that's a very telling statement. You saw the first step of it by getting rid of Kemba, Noel, and Burks. You could see another step of it by getting rid of D. Rose, assuming Tibbs allows that to happen, because we know, you know, that's his guy. You know, it's always been his guy and always will be his guy. So I don't know. I just foresee a lot more incorporation of Quickley into the rotations this year, and a potential for him to end up as a starter by the end of the year.
Just a quick thing on Rose. I mean, I can't see him being traded. And to be perfectly honest, I don't want him to be traded, because I don't really see the point of it. I mean, he's getting paid 14.5 this year, 15.5 on a player on a team option next year. And you're like, that's not an easy contract to move. And he's what, 35 this year, I think. And to be honest, he's already shown he's a brilliant mentor. He's when he's healthy, which I know is a big if, he's an incredibly effective player. If you're giving him up now, you're basically giving him up for nothing. And I think he's got so much more value to the team. If you're going to give him up, I would prefer to hold him back until maybe the deadline, where you can get a contending team to bite on him, and you can get a decent value in return. I don't really see the point of getting rid of him now. And I mean, the medical team, I guess, will know what his more recent surgery is. You know, whether it's, there was talk of it tidying up, a few issues that he had. And you know, if he's ready to go and he's healthy, then he's a guy that's willing to come off the bench. There's no issues there. You know, he said himself, you know, that's where he is in his career. You've got a guy there that's that experienced, that talented, that amazing, a mentor, willing to come off the bench, not going to be pouting that he doesn't get a start. You know, why would you want to trade somebody like that at the end of the day? I just don't see it happening, and I don't particularly want it to happen either. Yeah, there's obviously the issue with IQ, but I guess we work around that. You know, the two of them have shown that they can play amazing together, so there's got to be enough minutes to go around there. But yeah, I'd really hate to see him go.
I would hate to see him go as well, but it's the thing when you're a mentor, but the guy, your mentee, needs to get those extra minutes. And that's why people are talking about, well, Rose was with the team, helped develop Quickley. That's it's the main focus that we believe it's Quickley. And maybe he needs more space to run that second unit, because that second unit, when Quickley finally got that second unit last year, it's where he really started to blossom, when this second year had been atrocious so far, when he got better, when he took over that second unit. So it's a risk you play. And I agree, maybe trading him now, in regards to trading him at the deadline, he might have more value at the deadline. A team, especially if he's playing well, some team will bite on him. because it's a 15 million, but those teams have dead contracts, dead weight that they can trade off a 1 year or something like that. Most of these teams have those contracts, those 1 year contracts, like the Hawks. We got Solomon Hill and just waived him. He was a Nick for 5 minutes. So those contracts are movable, especially if a guy like DeRose. But the thing I was really thinking that we were going to trade Cam. Any possibility of any trade available, all these trades, we're going to get rid of Cam. And especially because people say that Tibbs doesn't like him, but he's still being on a team. I think that in the, especially with the reports of Obi as well, that Tibbs now likes Obi. Like he's going in the Leon Rose statement that we're going to play young. That's why people think, and I think Rose can get traded, if not at the beginning of the season, throughout the season. More Rose than Fournier, in my opinion.
Who would you rather give up, Fournier or Rose? If it was just one or the other?
Rose.
Yeah, Rose. Especially because if you want to go, you have Brunson, the starter, and if you want to give the reins to Quickly for him to develop, Rose. Because Rose will always keep minutes away from Quickly. I don't agree he's going to be a two guard. Being a two guard Quickly will put him in a spot that we have a lot of players to play around those positions, so he doesn't help him. If we move him, just fix him in a point guard position, he can have more time to play and develop. And I love Derrick Rose. There's no hate on Derrick Rose.
At the end of the day, Fournier is a 40% three-point shooter without an injury history. So, you know, you always take that, you know, regardless of his defensive limitations. DeRose is a 34-year-old point guard who has lost a step and he gets hurt a lot. You know, so if you have to get rid of one or the other, the emotional side might want you to get rid of Fournier, but the logical side will say to keep Fournier and get rid of Rose. But yeah, you know, it should be interesting to see how they handle it. How they handle Cam is a really good point, Rafa, is because we haven't really seen anything, right? You know, and like he got when he just was starting to get minutes, like he got hurt, you know, and you know, yeah. I really think the perception of him and what they want to do with him moving forward would have been a lot clearer if he hadn't have gotten hurt. But you know, it is what it is, and you know, we'll see what they do because you know they're going to have to make a decision on him after this next season, so. Should be interesting to see what they do at the deadline in regards to him and Rose, even Fournier, you know, if they look to move any of those guys. But wanted to kind of shift to a little bit of a league-wide focus. Obviously, the free agency period is always bananas, you know, and, you know, Woj and Shams tweets coming in like rapid fire, you know, and with a bunch of things happening. But this, I guess this offseason seems like a lot of guys stayed put. You know, a lot of guys signed extensions. A lot of guys came back to their teams as far as like guys who moved the needle with the exception of a couple trades. But we'll get to that in a second. But you had Nikola Jokic, Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal and Devin Booker all signed max contracts to stay with their teams. I guess does the fact that all of these guys or do any of these guys staying surprise you that you thought maybe they'd be on the move?
Well, certainly not Jokic. I mean, Denver obviously hit the jackpot with him, and there was no chance he wasn't re-signing for whatever he wanted. And yeah, obviously it's the most expensive deal in NBA history, but the guy's worth it, you know. And you know, they're never going to get a guy as good as that again. I would say. But Zach LaVine won. Very expensive for Zach LaVine. That one kind of raised an eyebrow. I know you can't risk losing these guys for nothing, but that did seem a lot for him. I mean, I think, as we mentioned earlier, I think a lot of these deals are with half an eye on, you know, the cap going up, and so they won't look as bad in a couple of years sort of thing. Bradley Beal, I think Washington missed a trick with Bradley Beal. I think they maybe should have traded him a year or two ago. Before this decision came up, you know, he's gone a bit stale in Washington. I don't think Washington are going anywhere fast. And I think, you know, they'll really struggle to move that trade if they don't make moves anytime soon, which I don't see them doing with their current position. But yeah, I think they missed out on that. I think maybe a year or two, they should have just blown it up when they got rid of Wall. They should have just got rid of Beal as well and got back a whole load of, you know, draft equity back at that point. So yeah,
they're an NBA purgatory, you know, they're not good enough to contend, not good enough to get the number one pick. Or not bad enough to get the number one pick.
It's a huge deal for Beal. And he's a good player, but he's not a great player. Like, to be honest, he's not in the upper you know, levels of the NBA in my opinion. But
yeah, I was just saying we got together to watch the free agency news if something juicy came up, and Omar said something about how Beal just got this type of contract because he's playing. And well, this kid's playing in Washington, not a big market or a huge market. So he's one of those players that gets max contracts to be playing in
he got the Dame Lillard deal. So what he did, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if they don't keep these players, there's no they won't sign any free agents. They won't sign anyone else. And there was a conversation, if not that much, but there was a deal when they had Bradley Beal on the team. Now maybe KD goes to join him because he's a hometown. Maybe he goes there. Obviously, they can't trade for him now, but if they keep a guy like this, there's always a possibility someone somehow comes to join their star player. And so if Beal was in another, or the Lakers or the Celtics, he wouldn't get this type of deal because they can attract other types of players. And that's why he got this kind of max money. Bradley Beal is not worth this type of money. He's a great player, but he's not a star or a superstar.
Okay, so you guys talked about a lot about Beal, so I want to talk about LaVine. Before I say that, Jokic and Booker staying, no brainer. You know, the foundations of both franchises.
I mean, if we could trade everybody for Jokic, I would. Just have Jokic and RJ Barrett playing. We would win.
Because Jokic can play all five positions, so there's not really anybody. Yeah.
No big deal.
Any need for anyone else? So.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, he'll get in the playoffs either way. I mean, Bradley Beal to me is just like, I think I've said this before, he's a all-time great bag chaser. You know, he's just going to get that big contract, you know, and he'll probably demand a trade in 2 or 3 years, end up on the Lakers. Like everybody thought he would eventually.
Didn't he ask, or there were conversations about it a few years ago?
Yeah, I mean, everything, but it all ended up with him saying, yeah, I like Washington, I want to stay here. And honestly, I don't know if you guys like read a lot of Fred Katz's stuff, the Knicks beat reporter, because he used to be on the Washington beat for The Athletic before he got here. And he's had a lot of conversations with Bradley Beal, and he said that the guy actually likes playing in Washington, so... You know, it's a great city.
I've been there a couple of times. I love Washington.
Yeah, I mean that franchise should be better. That market deserves a better team than the Wizards have been fielding out the past few years. And I mean, they got some pieces that are interesting, but like you guys said, they're nowhere near contending. But with LaVine, it's interesting because I feel like Chicago's in a similar situation as Washington, maybe just a little bit better. Like, what's their ceiling really? Is their ceiling a second round team, you know? And, you know, LaVine choosing to lock into the trio of him, Vucevic, and DeRozan seems kind of interesting to me. Well, you already know he would have had suitors across the league. So, you know, him staying surprised me a little. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the money talks and these guys are staying. Although, interesting point. A guy who's probably going to end up taking less money, he hasn't signed yet officially, is James Harden. You know, he declined his player option, probably going to take about 10, 12 million less when it's all said and done, you know.
Poor guy.
I'm not commending Harden, but he could have just said, fuck it, I'm opting in, pay me my money. Yeah, but he's making like hand over fist money with Adidas anyway. It doesn't even matter for him.
But
you know,
he was the bad guy in the Nets.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Can you imagine Harden trying to explain to the strippers, you know, I'm sorry, sorry,
I'm only getting paid
30 million now, so I've got to cut it down a bit.
Oh my god!
And I spend so much money on beard hair products, so you know, I had to cut my lifestyle decisions out in one way or another. Sorry, ladies. Yeah, I guess that'll prevent him from having his jersey retired at the Philadelphia strip clubs like they are in Houston. So, you know, sad times for James Harden there. But let's talk about that big ass trade though. So I was listening to, before I lay out the trade, I was listening to this Bill Simmons podcast and they were talking about it. And he said that this might be end up being one of the worst trades in the last 30 years. And so let's lay it out. The Timberwolves and the Jazz made a deal that sent Rudy Gobert to Minnesota. And so that's all the Jazz are sending out, just Gobert. And Minnesota is giving them Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Leandro Balmero, Walker Kessler, Jared Vanderbilt, 4 first-round picks, 3 of which are unprotected, and a pick swap in 2026.
Oh, my God.
They also, Minnesota, have given Karl-Anthony Towns a Supermax extension. So they are paying 2 Supermax contracts to their center and power forward now is what Towns is going to become. So, first of all, does this make Minnesota a contender in the West?
No.
Second of all, the rhetorical question of did they give up too much?
Wait, yes.
Yes.
React. Hit me. Wait,
if you look at it, it's not about the players. It's okay. It's what 1, 2, 4, 5 players, but they're not. Oh, this guy's going to be amazing.
The draft picks is the big thing. Yeah.
3 unprotected.
It's bad.
Like
cat injury fucks it up.
Cat isn't a guy who isn't reliable as a star. D'Angelo Russell? No. I forgot his name. The rookie.
Edwards.
Edwards. That's the guy. Okay, Anthony Edwards. He's a great player. He's the guy. He's the future of that franchise. But Gobert, like, is saying, hey, Cat, don't care about, forget defending. Just go at it. Don't defend. Gobert is there for that. Like, Gobert was mad in Utah because he didn't get the ball as much on offense, and he goes to a place where he's like the fourth option offensively. Yeah, that's gonna work amazing. That's gonna be an amazing fit. Ultimately, 5 picks they gave up. Like, it's a pick swap and a 4 first. Oh my god, it's. It's to me, I saw that and said, okay, Minnesota's not doing anything in the near future. Anthony Edwards will be a Laker in like 4 years.
Yeah, it made absolutely zero. It was my first thought was what you said, Omar, about the salaries. I was like, well, wait a minute. You've got your center and your power forward both on huge, huge contracts. Yeah, you've got potential superstar on a rookie deal, which they're lucky that he is on a rookie deal. Obviously, this wouldn't have been able to happen.
That's the move. I think that's the move.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, the only thing I can see that would be a reason to do it was if you watch, I watched a bit of them in the playoffs this year and they played really well, but they really lacked like experience and a rim protector. Cat was making so many mistakes, like silly, stupid mistakes, where you just really needed somebody kind of at his back, you know, a steady hand, bit of experience to kind of lead the team through, you know. So a Gobert type player is exactly what they needed, but not giving up that and not on that contract, it was just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, that when Gobert signed that contract with Utah, I actually said there's absolutely no way that they can trade that contract. Nobody will be stupid enough to take that contract on.
NBA Siberia says, au contraire, my friend.
So that is why they had to give up what they gave up, because of that contract, basically. So what they gave up was fair based on his contract.
They're paying their front court $85 million.
A lot of money.
85. A lot of money. Like 20, 10 minutes ago, we were talking about teams not overpaying centers. Well, Minnesota missed the boat.
The thing about this deal is like, all right, Minnesota's like, all right, cool. Let's put all of the chips in the middle and try to do something. But you do that with a wing player. You don't do that with a traditional rim protecting center. Like, I'm sorry, Gobert is an excellent defensive player, the best defensive big man in the league. He's not worth that money, 45, whatever million it is. And they mortgage their future. The fact that the kid gives me is that the picks are unprotected. You're not even throwing a top four protection in there just in case, you know, and that's what's baffling to me. And I'm looking, I was like, all right, where are they at in the West after this trade? Because the players they lost are, you lose Beverly, which, you know, defensively hurts. You lose Beasley, who's like an erratic shooter, whatever. I think losing Jared Vanderbilt is kind of a big deal for them. He was a good rotation player. And you're like, you're banking on Gobert, so he's not going to be playing any offense. And you're hoping Towns is effective as a power forward now. And of course, you still have Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell. Like, I still don't feel like they're a lock for like a top four seed in the West, you know, even with that, you know. So, and then Gobert's been kind of like declining the past couple of years, you know, in a lot of assets of his game. So the next thing about this is, so, you know, Utah didn't get D'Angelo Russell. You know, they didn't get a high leverage player in this deal. So it indicates they're full in on the rebuild, right? So where does this leave Donovan Mitchell? Obviously, a lot of rumors about him potentially being traded as well, and them just saying, F this, blow the whole thing up. So where are you guys at with what this means for Donovan Mitchell's future in Utah?
I mean, I can't see him staying. I mean, this, I just don't see it. I know there was the whole thing about the All-Star game in Utah, and, you know, but it just, everything around that franchise just seems to be that, you know, they're in rebuild mode. There's no way that Mitchell, with the value that he's built himself up to be, is going to be waiting about for the next 3 years in a team that's, you're probably never going to attract a free agent. He's never going to be in the market for big trades and things like that. I just don't see it at all. I think Mitchell's going to sooner rather than later probably ask for a trade. Where he goes, I don't know. I've said to you guys in the chat, I mean, I've gone back and forth with this about on the Knicks. Yeah, I think the Gobert deal has probably completely destroyed the market as to what his value is. Do you know, well, if Gobert's getting that, then Mitchell must get at least more than that, you know, and which is just a ridiculous price. But I think with Gobert, it was all about the contract. Do you know what he was on? That's why that deal ended up as crazy as it was. So I don't think it's as simple as, well, if Gobert got that, then Mitchell gets more. Do you know, it's a different situation. But, I mean, my initial thoughts with the Knicks were that, you know, now's not the time to kind of push the chips in. But I'm also kind of torn in the fact that if there's an opportunity to improve the roster, then you have to take it, because you don't know if this option's going to come in 2-3 years down the line. Or you've also got guys, you know, like Obi, IQ, you know, guys like that are going to need extended. You know, the cap's going to run out pretty quick. And if you've got an opportunity to at least improve the roster, then you have to take it, but obviously not for a huge overpay. So it depends so much on the price, on what they could get them for. Always, you know, you've got to look at, you know, who else could actually seriously afford them? Like if Mitchell requests a trade, I mean, he's been linked with the Nets, you know, in a three-team deal. He's been linked with the Miami. You know, he's always been linked with Miami. So I would guess Miami, the Nets, and the Knicks are probably the only three teams that he would probably leave for. I would guess. But yeah, I'm kind of torn on it. I would love him on the Knicks. I don't think the size thing with him and Brunson is as big a deal as everybody says. Do you know, I think there's enough there that they could cope with it. And obviously on the offensive end, he would be a massive improvement on what we've got. So I'm tempted. But yeah, as I say, it hugely depends on the price. But Danny Ainge always worries me, you know, that he's involved. So he's always going to be looking to fleece whoever he trades with. So yeah, that does worry me. I know where you guys stand on it, but I'm interested to see if any part of you kind of thinks that it's a good idea, because I know you guys have been generally steadfast against it, but is there anything that kind of tempts you with a Mitchell trade?
So no, I think
no.
No.
That's funny.
It's Mitchell trading for Mitchell's. If that's what Utah got for Gobert, imagine what they would ask for Mitchell. And even if we traded all of our young players, including RJ Barrett, to pair him with Brunson and Randall, that's not winning any championships.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's as linear as that. I don't think it's Gobert cost this, so Mitchell cost this. I don't think it's. I mean, that might be the reality, but it shouldn't be.
I think they will, if they value Donovan Mitchell more than Gobert. Mm-hmm. Trading Gobert and keeping Mitchell is like saying, Mitchell, we're going to build around you with players that like you and you like as well. So, because the relationship between Mitchell and Gobert wasn't good and it didn't improve at all. And, well, the Utah had to do something and they traded Gobert. I think they will try to keep Mitchell as long as possible because he's locked in until 2026. So there's nothing much he can do. Oh, yeah, ask for a trade. Yeah, we're not trading you. Play. And there you go. We're paying you a lot of money.
Durant's the same situation, though. I mean, Durant's got, you know, years to go in his contract. These guys can just force their way out now. It's a changed situation. The contracts don't mean a hell of a lot now.
Yeah, you can force your way out, but it's like the team say, okay, we will explore trades, but if nothing is good enough, we won't trade you for Russell Westbrook. We will trade you because you're a big player, so we will trade you for whatever it feels to be good for us. And in the meantime, you be a professional and you play. And Mitchell, I think they will... Well, they got a lot of assets. Let's say that Utah Jazz are loaded with picks and with players now. So they can make a few moves. Because they traded away Royce O'Neal as well, and he got a few picks or one pick in return. So they got picks to spare. They can make a trade. Imagine if they landed Kevin Durant. Imagine if all those picks go to I know the Nets want two All-Stars in return, so I don't know. How would they do
you'll
that?
You'll take Mike Conley and you'll like it.
Next. Yeah, okay. Basically.
Kevin Durant in Utah, that's something I want to see.
That'd be funny. My thing on Mitchell, though, like to answer your question, Alex, is he's incredibly alluring from just like a shot-making perspective. You know, he's a big shot taker, a big shot maker. The efficiency is not great. I mean, he takes 21 shots a game to average 25 points, you know, and so I think
he would feel at home.
Yeah, him and Randall will be good to go. Yeah, I think the package is the non-starter for me. You know, you're going to have to give up a bunch of picks, like four or five picks. You're going to have to give up a couple young players, and you're going to have to give up. I mean, realistically, if you're giving up an all-star, you know, you would give up Julius in that scenario. But who's to say they wouldn't also ask for Obi? So what do you do at power forward? So you like start playing Hartenstein at the four? I mean,
Taj Gibson.
Oh my God. Can we not? I think that's my big, and like he's really not playing defense. You know, he doesn't really. He's no longer a two-way player for whatever reason. He's still young. I mean, that's the crazy thing about it. But like the past couple of years, he hasn't really been playing defense.
He had Gobert. That's the
thing. Yeah, that's the thing. That entire team stopped playing
defense. He is a capable defender, though.
When he wants to be, he can be a great defender, but. The problem is he hasn't wanted to be in the past couple of years. You know, that's my concern when it comes to Donovan Mitchell. I mean, he's a superstar. I mean, there's no way around it. You know, if you can get him and it's not mortgaging your entire franchise, you at least have the conversation. You know,
that's where I'm at. You've got to have the conversation because I think a lot of Knicks fans are thinking along lines of they're waiting for the perfect player, you know, and the perfect player really doesn't exist unless you've got somebody like Durant on your team or, you know, LeBron or somebody like that. It's
the perfect deal, right? The perfect deal. It's like, I don't believe that the Knicks.
Yeah. The conversation begins and ends as if Utah wants RJ in the deal. That's the definitely key, like, dividing line. You know, some Knicks fans would be like, oh, yeah, if he gets us Donovan Mitchell, sure. Other people are like, no, this is our guy. We want to keep our guy, you know?
That's me.
So, that's – I mean, I lean more towards keeping RJ as well. I just think as far as a growth development perspective, you know, RJ as a wing has a chance to traject to being Jason Tatum and – Donovan Mitchell is probably going to only be declining on certain aspects of his game.
Imagine if Randall was, I'm saying Randall because he's the closest we had. If Randall was a legit all-star, legit star that needed someone else. Yes. Okay. I would be okay. I'm sorry. RJ has to go, but Donovan Mitchell being a superstar, like you said, Omar. And if Randall was a superstar in his own right.
Yeah, then you get a big two. You know, it's your Anthony Davis deal at that point.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't pair Donovan Mitchell a pair with Randall. It would be better than a pair with Gobert because I don't offensively maybe defensively no. So I don't know
at that point. You have two guys who can be capable defenders, but have Jace basically checked out on it the last year. So that's somewhat problematic.
That has lottery written all over it.
Yeah.
Well, just one last thing. So, I mean, everybody keeps going on about being stuck in mediocrity and things like that.
That's a home run swing. I mean, that's
but,
fair.
But see, keeping all this young core that we've got and extending them when the time comes and they just all end up being good players, and that's when you end up stuck in mediocrity. You end up with a cap sheet with guys or like, I don't know, Obi on kind of reasonable money, IQ and reasonable money, RJ's obviously on big money, and you just end up with nothing much other than just a play-in, playoff experience, you know. And there's moments that you just have to pick your right moment for trading for guys that are going to take you to the next level. And all I'm saying is we shouldn't just discount Mitchell. Yeah. You know, we have to have the conversation, you know.
My issue with this is it really ultimately depends on what you think the trajectory of RJ's career is going to be. Sure. If you see, like, all right, this guy's a DeMar DeRozan, for example, where he's like, he'll make some all-star games, but he's not going to take you to the next level, as was evidenced when he was in Toronto. But you could also say, like, well, this guy's like face of the franchise superstar potential. And it's so hard because he's only 22. You know, he's so young still, you know, even though it feels like he's been in New York forever, you know, he's still incredibly young. So that's what makes it so hard, because when you want to put all your chips in the middle and go and get that superstar, you're basically making a statement on what you think RJ's cap is, which is better as a trade piece than as a centerpiece of your franchise, you know? And that's the conversation that I'm sure they're having all the time at in the front office and deciding, all right, what does this guy have? Which is why I think this year is going to be super important for RJ. Year four, you know, for him, which is traditionally when the wings start to pop, you know, your superstars become superstars type thing. So, you know, we'll see. And I think you guys have both mentioned that, you know, he's on a bunch of years still in Utah. If he doesn't get traded this summer, I think he gets traded next summer. So maybe that's when they decide to make their swing once they get a better grasp of what RJ is and what Julius is going to be moving forward as
well. Obi is as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Gives another year of tape.
It is what it is, because let's not forget that these couple of years have been awkward with COVID and everything. So it hasn't been normal years, the development years, especially for Obi and Quickly. They didn't even get 1 year of summer league. So the first year, they only got the second year, and it was a different beast. But yeah, I agree with you. They're seeing what the players give, and they're not going to sign every player. And at one point, the heart has to be put on the side, heart on the players. And you have to think with your brain, and like, okay, we need to trade this guy and this guy. They're trading assets. Maybe Quickly is the guy to build around, and not RJ. I don't know. I'm just saying, or Obi is the guy that this year he will be. Who the hell is this player? And Randall, get out of here. We never know how they can boom. And it's always a gamble. It's always a gamble.
Right. Yeah. And fans, you know, obviously we've talked about before, are always going to overvalue these young prospects. And, you know, it seems like they're gearing up for a big move sometime in the near future, whether it's for Donovan Mitchell or somebody else. You know, they've stockpiled draft picks. They got their young assets.
Kevin Durant? Is that it?
Oh, funny you should mention that, Rafa, because our final discussion point today is the neighbors across the river, the Brooklyn Nets, and the continuing implosion that seems to be happening with that team. Kyrie Irving opted into the last year of his deal. A lot of thoughts that he wants to be traded to LA. Kevin Durant also has now requested a trade, like Alex alluded to earlier. His preferred destinations, shocker, are two number one seeds in Phoenix and Miami. I guess, how do you guys foresee this unfolding? Do you think either of them gets traded this offseason? Or do they both get traded? Maybe one gets traded. What do you guys think is going to happen?
It's a great way to finish the pod, just to have a bit of a laugh at the Nets. I mean, just the chaos that's going on is just, you know, getting me through the summer, getting me through the offseason. It's the real interesting thing to me is, are the two of them going to stay together? Because the big thing was that, me and my best mate are going to the Nets, you know, to build this thing, you know. You know, the fact that Durant seems to just be like, right, dropping Kyrie the first opportunity he can get. But I mean, what's really interesting to me as well is the fact that Durant put in his trade request, and it almost felt like a little bit of a kind of power move, and that he was just like, you know, you need to extend Kyrie or I'm off, sort of thing. And the Nets are just, I love the fact that, you know, the Nets are just standing up to him and just saying, no, we've had enough of this, you know. And you know, if you want to go, then we're going to get a historic return for you. So, and for Kyrie, it's just like, if you can find somewhere to go, then off you go, sort of thing. And if what I'd love to see I'd love to see Kyrie in the Lakers. I'd love to see Westbrook coming back. I'd love to see Westbrook and Simmons kind of lighten it up from 3-point land next season. I'd love to see, I mean, Durant's obviously going to get a huge return no matter what. I'd like to see them getting picks back so that, you know, in the short term anyway, that they're just going to be a mess. So I think probably the most sensible place for Durant to go seems to be Phoenix. There was a lot of talk about a 3-team trade with Utah, with Simmons going to Utah, Ayton going to Brooklyn. There was even talk of Mitchell being part of the deal as well. You know, just be a, it'd be a crazy deal if it came off. And but yeah, it seems like Chris Paul, Durant, and Booker would be some team in Phoenix. I'd actually quite like to see that, you know, just from a basketball perspective, because as much as we like shitting on the Nets, you know, Durant is just, you know, such a box office player to watch from a neutral point of view. And to see him, Paul, and Booker together would be pretty special, I think. So I'd like to see him go to Phoenix and, you know, hopefully get a ring for Chris Paul just at the end of his career. That'd be a nice way to end his career. But yeah, what the Nets get back, I would like them to get picks back mostly, and just to to make a mess of those, I think. And just, yeah, watch Westbrook and Simmons. Westbrook, Simmons, and lots of picks. That's what they like the Nets to end up with.
You asked if they would sit together, Durant and Irving. Like, there is no team that has enough assets to trade for both of them. There is no way one team can do it. Even if in a three-team deal, there's no way they can do it. It's impossible. Because Durant will take, especially for Durant, because Irving, his market is not as high as a player of his talent should be. Because there's a lot of things around him. That's why the Nets didn't want to sign him for what he wanted. And I've said this before, I give some credit to the Nets front office for doing this. Like, enough of your shit. But it might be 3 years too late because they gave everything up for them. I mentioned all of this. They decided they wanted DeAndre Jordan over Jared Allen. That was a stupid move. Jared Allen actually played games. They gave him the coach they wanted when they had a good coach. They traded everyone they had because the team they had with Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert and everything, if they kept that team with Durant and Irving, it would be a better team than trading everyone for their guy and James Harden. Durant is to blame, but Kyrie did all this. Kyrie wanted to win in Harden, and Kyrie was the one to go after Harden so much that Harden requested a trade. So it's like, Kyrie, what the hell are you doing? You're messing with our assets. You're messing with the team. You're messing with everything, and you're not even playing. So please shut up. And then he asked probably a max contract, and the team said, yeah, well, you'll get the max if you play X amount of games. Oh, the disrespect. Yeah, you disrespect an entire front office, an entire team in the Nets. That's not thinking about the fans at all.
The Steve Nash moves was a big mistake as well.
I mean, but it's not Steve Nash's fault. I mean, they asked for that.
Oh, no.
They want Steve Nash because Steve Nash was a big part of the Warriors team as well when Durant was there. So the pick makes somewhat sense to get Steve Nash, but it's not because of Nash that they lost. What can Steve Nash do? Like, Arden, Irving, Durant, play. I'll put player name A, player name B playing with you. And then sweep up player name C and D because he didn't have anyone else to play with. They're like, oh, Blake Griffin. Yes, amazing. This Blake Griffin is amazing to have. Yes. So they did everything that these players wanted. And they basically took the front office hostage. The entire franchise hostage, and now they're throwing a tantrum, and it's basically what I see. They're taking a tantrum, and if Durant is saying, "Oh, you didn't sign the max to my friend, so I'm going away. I'm going to give a championship to a team that needs me to win." Yes, the top two teams in the East and West. Yes, so you're pulling a Golden State Warriors all over again. And in the meantime, you're making, because everybody shits on LeBron for making super teams, apparently it's not that easy to win with a super team. LeBron does it, you couldn't do it. Well,
yeah, this kind of ends the LeBron via versus KD debate, doesn't it? You know, you know what, though, guys? You know, I was told that the city was under new management. I was told that the Barclays Center is the new Mecca, you know? I was told that New York isn't cool anymore. The Knicks aren't cool anymore. I was told the future is in Brooklyn. Yet 3 short years later, they have 1 playoff series win to show for it. And it's funny, you know, it's funny to see this like implosion because so much of what the Nets did goes against the norm. They basically said, you know, took an approach to coaching where we don't need a coach. I could be the coach one day. KD could be the coach the other day.
They took an
approach to the regular season. The regular season doesn't matter. Just get us into the playoffs. We're going to ball. They took an approach like we're going to bring in a third ball dominant guy who – and the issue is they bring in these guys who none of them have the leadership quality that you want. The reason it works in with LeBron, LeBron's a leader. You know, think whatever you want to think about LeBron. He like rallies his team together and they play for him. KD doesn't do that. Kyrie's never done that. Ben Simmons doesn't do that. And James Harden, probably not as well. I mean, I don't know how it was in Houston, but, you know, it's just a situation where you don't have a natural-born leader on that team. And your coach isn't a natural-born leader because you've kind of, like, relegated the fact that he can't be, you know, regardless of whatever characteristics Steve Nash has. So it's kind of like a case study in how not to build a team. And the funny thing about it is, like, they had a well-built, organically grown team that was fun to watch. Granted, they weren't winning championships, you know, but they were a second-round team then, and they're a second-round team now. And now it's going to blow up all in their face, and they're going to execute another terrible trade for the second time in a decade, like they did when they tried to bring in Pierce and Garnett before in Brooklyn. So, yeah, I mean, the Nets ultimately, you know, it's funny because everyone would talk about, like, they had built a culture, right? And
best trade culture.
They don't have it. Like, the Nets is, like, history lies in like, the ABA and Dr. J and the Jason Kidd era in the early 2000s. But since they moved to Brooklyn, they don't have any of that. They've kind of, like, shed themselves of that, right? And, you know, it's just funny. I think I kind of want to close out on this, though. So, real quick, when it's all said and done, what teams are each of these guys on? Alex, start with you.
Sorry, just very quickly, Steve Nash thing. All I meant was that the mistake there was that it gave Kyrie and Durant the power.
Yeah, it's not Steve Nash's fault.
No, of course not.
It's the situation that they put him in.
It was a huge mistake.
It's Kyrie, it's Durant, and it's the front office as well because they gave him that power.
Steve Nash probably should have cut his teeth as an assistant for a couple of years before he got a head coaching job. I think we can all agree with that. But yeah, he got put into a situation where no coach would succeed.
Sure. As for teams, I would say Kyrie on the Lakers, Durant on the Suns.
Okay. Rafa, what you got?
Kyrie goes to the Lakers, and I was thinking about, I'm divided between Miami and the Suns. But I don't think KD picks Miami ultimately because he would be in the shadow of LeBron in Miami if he goes to Miami. So maybe the Suns, but I don't know what package, what trade. Yeah. I want to see that, but that's why I was saying I don't know if he even gets traded, but if he does, it's the Suns, yeah.
I'm going to say Kyrie to the Lakers as well. And I think KD does end up in Miami. I think he doesn't care anymore. Ever since he went to Golden State, he's like, whatever, you guys are going to think whatever you're going to think of me, and I don't really give a shit. So, yeah, that's, I think, the end game. But, you know, it should be a crazy offseason to follow that story alongside the Donovan Mitchell story as well to see how that happens. That's a great thing about the NBA, man. It's like never ending.
I just want to take a moment to offer a hug for Ben Simmons, okay? Because he can't catch a break.
He's ready, though. He's ready. Yeah. Did you notice he's post?
Yeah, minutes before KD makes a trade to them. Oh my
God. Yes, I'm off the Sixers. I'm in the Nets. I'm gonna win a champ. Wait, Kyrie, Durant, where you at? Come on, man. Hey,
hey, Russell, they don't even got Bruce Brown anymore. He's moved on as well. I don't even know who's going to be on this roster next year.
Patty Mills,
Cam Thomas, right? You know, that's rough. But
Bruce Brown's gone.
He went to Denver. Yeah, it was a good move for Denver. I like that. This upcoming week, of course, there's NBA Summer League. So good chance for Knick fans to get a glimpse at a little bit of Trevor Keels, I believe. Jericho Sims, Amir Sims are going to be there. A couple other young players as well.
Just play Amir Sims.
That's my guy. I love him.
Yeah, man.
I hope I hope he makes it in the league. You know, even if it's not for the Knicks, I don't know. I just like his game. I hope he makes it in the league. But that's going to wrap us up for another episode here. As always, if you like the podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to follow us on Twitter, please do so. We are at WW Knicks Podcast. And fun thing to announce, we actually just crossed the 1,000 follower threshold this past week, which is awesome. You know, shout out to Rafa and Alex for their hard work on the Twitter. I did nothing with that, otherwise, except tweeting out an occasional Colin Sexton agenda. And they've been, the engagement on Twitter and on the real though has been incredible. Knick fans always interacting with us, checking out clips that we do of the episode and takes that we have about players and things of that nature. So thanks to everybody who has followed us on Twitter. And we look forward to obviously having more conversations about the Knicks in this upcoming year. Just incredible that for me is that, you know, we joined Twitter with the podcast account in September, and 10 months later, we're over 1,000 people, and it's all organic. You know, we didn't buy followers. We didn't do follow trains. We didn't do any of that stuff, you know, and we just, it just, and it's all Knick fans from all across the world, basketball fans from all across the world, which is the important thing, you know. Like, whenever we open up the timeline, we see a bunch of stuff in, like, Portuguese and, like, German accounts, Spanish accounts, just a bunch of different stuff, and that's kind of, like, the whole idea, so.
Had some great guests on, but hopefully we can do some more, and just especially from across the world, you know, we've had, you know, a few people on this year, but I think we should really push for that next year. Try and get the you know, the worldwide Knicks onto the worldwide pod.
Yeah. So the real ask is for Rafa to get his fellow countryman who happens to play for the Sacramento Kings. That's the next goal.
Yeah. There he is. That's the biggest.
Hey, you're tweeting highlights, man. This is your new obligation. So,
anyway. Hey, man. Come on.
Hopefully he won't be poached by some Kings.
This is what's going to happen, okay? We are going to trade for De'Aaron Fox, and he is going to be a part of the package in a couple of years. So,
wait, De'Aaron Fox? What is this, 2021?
Hey, you want to get Nemus over here to New York? That's the way you do it, okay? All right, Rafa. Obi for Nemus in a second-round pick. Do you do it?
Oh, man, no.
No?
No, man. I would love to have him as the Portuguese player with the Knicks, but, yeah. I mean, I'm a put my front office hat on. I'm saying, no, it's no. Give me Fox with him.
Oh, throw him in there. Throw Davion Mitchell in the mix. You know, it's fine. Okay.
Yeah. Albert. Right. Oh, no, not anymore.
Ooh, yeah, he's gone. He's in Indiana. Whoops. So that's going to wrap us up for another episode, guys. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Worldwide Knicks, and we will catch you guys soon.